we don't have the power. It's what I'm trying to get at it in different ways. And it's exactly what I'm trying to express as the catch-22 situation. Precisely that. So if you have that sense of it, you're getting exactly what I'm trying to get at. We do get into catch-22s with our own emotions. We do. Precisely what I'm getting at. Alright, now, this kind of impotence is particularly true of those complexes that are rooted so deep in my past, that go back even beyond my earliest memory. It's particularly true of those. Because then I don't have a clue as to what I'm dealing with and where it comes from. As I mentioned in the last class, there are wounds that I believe that they're common, that we have from our earliest months and years, no matter how good our family upbringing may have been, that are sitting there in us, and we don't know what they are. They're back beyond our earliest memory. And I don't have a clue as to where they come from. And many of those, Freud is right on this point, have to do with the body and my own relationship to the body, and my own relationship to the bodies of others. Freud is correct on that, but I think that Ernest Becker is more accurate as to precisely what the problem is with the body for the child. It's much more a problem of powerlessness, the weakness of the body, than it is a matter of explicit sexual desire in infancy, as Freud would have it be. Nonetheless, that there is that whole matter of my relationship to my own body. And the woundedness that is there and can be present from those earliest months and years of our lives that we can't even remember. And those wounds are particularly the ones that can get in the way, by their power, of the smooth unfolding of our creative capacities. The power is increased as I don't have any way of getting at what it is that's bothering me. If I have an avenue to it, my facility in dealing with it is increased. But as that avenue is removed, and it is removed when I don't have a memory of what I'm dealing with and where it comes from, power is increased. Okay, so for me to be able to negotiate compassionately my own darkness, somehow I must be given the freedom. I can't find that freedom. Here's the catch-22, and here's what you were talking about with the hopelessness. In my own creative vector, it's not there. That freedom must be given from beyond the creative vector. Has to be given by an agency that is independent of my own attempts to make myself. Now you can identify with what I'm talking about to the extent that you have had any kind of experience where you are simply up against your own powerlessness to move beyond a certain point, a certain emotional point. If you've never had that experience, then maybe what I'm talking about is dark. But if you've had the experience, I simply cannot find in my own resources any way of moving beyond this point. And that's the thing I'm trying to articulate. I cannot, within the creative capacities of my own psychic and intentional consciousness, find the wherewithal to move beyond the power of that emotion. And I don't care what that emotion is, whether it is anger, whether it is lust, whether it is fear, or whatever it might happen to be. Do find ourselves caught in certain emotional binds where there simply is not the power within my own consciousness to get beyond that. And I come up against it over and over and over again. Now, if you've had that experience, then you know what I'm trying to articulate, however faultily I may be trying to do it. I'm trying to get at that catch-22 situation, within my own creative capacities, there is no way of moving beyond this point. That's the kind of thing I'm trying to get at in terms of our own experience. Okay. That is what I mean by moral impotence. I am unable to take a moral position, the responsible position, with regard to this darkness. Now, again, I only make the moral impotence worse if I impute guilt to it. That just makes it worse. It's beyond the question of guilt. If I impute personal guilt to it, then I'm, again, adopting that attitude of hatred towards it, blaming it. Guilt is imputable only to willed sin. And this is not willed. This is something over which I have no control. It is sinfulness, yes. It is the sin of the world, yes. But it is not personal sin. But I can't compassionate with it either because I'm bound by its power and I hate it because it gets in the way. It keeps me bound up. Now, socially, if there is nothing that comes to meet me, if there is no release, if it is just hopeless, If there is just simply an impossibility of sustained creative development, it's impossible, then what we're talking about is the inevitability of further and further victimization in history. Because I will act out of my darkness, that darkness will affect others and wound them, and so on and so forth. So we're talking about a steady process of decline. If there is no way out, there is no way out of the power of sin in the world, from a theological point of view. If there is no response to, just talking about the increase of absurdity in the social situation in the world. Just increases exponentially. So there must be some agency from beyond the creative vector that goes to work on the darkness. Otherwise, we are talking about a very hopeless human situation, not just for myself, but in the whole of society and history. Hopelessness. The tangle, what Lonergan calls the tangle of the social surge. A hopeless tangle of the social surge, social absurdity. There is no way out from within the creative effort. We are incapable of sustained development on the basis of our own resources. And that incapacity simply becomes worse and worse and worse if there is no resolution from beyond the creative vector. Because victimization of one person leads to that of others, and so on and so forth, and there's no way out of it. Yes?
Can there be a defending vector of the two in principle coincide?
They are. The position that I'm going to present is that they're complementary to one another. They complement each other. The healing vector is for the sake of creativity in the world. But the creative vector without the healing vector leads to distorted behavior. The healing vector needs the creative vector needs the healing vector for its own smooth performance. But the healing vector is for the sake of the smooth performance of the creative vector. It's not an end in itself.
Well, in more say in older terms, the recognition of power itself. The act of will taking full account of itself. And on that basis, I say the possibility of descending back or grace.
The recognition of powerlessness is already the work of grace. Yes, it is. But the work of grace, of course, goes much further than that. And what I was getting at in terms of your question was that the healing vector is for the sake of releasing the creative vector. In very poetic terms, Teresa of Avila says the water is for the flowers. The water of God's grace is for the flower of the living. It's not an end in itself. That's it very simply. It's getting at the same thing. Okay. Now, I believe that the agency that can open up the freedom to take responsibility for my own darkness is love. A love that comes to meet me as I am. And that lets me rest in being loved. The love of another human being can do this. The awareness that I am loved as I am opens up an emotional space that frees me to begin to take responsibility for my own life. My own dark life, the dark side of myself. When I can rest in being loved, and there's a love that comes to meet me and simply lets me rest, the emotional space begins to be opened up to begin take some responsibility for my own life. And as I say, this love can come. It can be the love of another person that brings my being to rest and frees me and begins to heal. That gives an inner space. That lets me take up a new posture in my regard, in my own regard, a new posture toward myself. Or if you want, that begins to challenge the self-hatred with which I've been treating my own weakness. It begins to raise a challenge to that self-hatred. It says, hey, wait a minute. I love you. Let down your defenses. It is love that heals. Love that starts a new movement in consciousness. But that love is an agency now that is from beyond my own creative capacities to make myself. It comes to meet me from a position independent of my own efforts to make myself. Now, the level of consciousness where that kind of love meets us is that fifth level. Where all the striving to make myself that's been going on at these first four levels simply comes to rest. And I rest in the love of another for me. In a sense that where everything that I've been wanting by striving for meaning and for truth and for real good is given to me. And so I can rest from these activities, these operations. And their difficulty and their frustration and their breakdown and everything else. Because in a sense, what I've been looking for is suddenly offered. So I can rest. When I am genuinely loved, I can rest in that. And rest in the love that is offered to me. And so that experience is not one that takes place down here in the chaos of sense impressions. It's an experience that fulfills the longing of my consciousness for what is good. It fulfills that. And so it's beyond the upward striving of my consciousness. And it brings that striving, that yearning, that conation, that reaching out, brings it to some kind of fulfillment. So that love then, I think, meets me here, where my desires are fulfilled. However momentarily and briefly it may be, I am resting in a good. And then that movement begins to work downwards. I'm going to discuss the movement downwards in a few moments. I'm just, at the moment, just stating that it's my conviction that love is the agency that heals. Love is the agency that opens up the affective space. Gives me the freedom to begin to take responsibility for what I couldn't deal with before. And when the love of another comes to meet me as I am, unconditional love, then that free space is opened up. I want to make one more point before going into the healing vector, however, and that is this. I also believe that when we're talking about the effects of sin in ourselves, the love that can sustain that healing will not be purely and simply the love of another human being. A love that can sustain the power of healing will not be just the love of another human being. It will almost always be mediated to us through other human beings. Or through a community. But if it's a love that is able to sustain the movement of healing, it is a love that is beyond human capacity. If it can sustain a healing from the effects of sin in myself. Why do I say this? Because, for one thing, other human beings are also flawed by the mystery of evil. Other human beings are as incapable as I am of sustaining their own healing from the effects of sin. Another human being cannot be the source of my redemption from evil. The medium, yes. The source, no. another human being tries to be the source of my redemption, that person's love has gone astray. It has become caught up in its own power complex. That person is trying to be God. If that person is trying to be the source of my redemption from evil, the source of my salvation, or if I ask another person or expect another person to be the source of my salvation, I am asking another person to be God. And I'm laying an impossible burden on his or her shoulders. Human love is a love that must be humble enough to mediate the love of God, but not to attribute that salvific power to itself. And once it begins to attribute that salvific power to itself, you get into binds and double binds between people. The best treatment of this that I've ever seen is in Ernest Becker's The Denial of Death, chapters 7 and especially 8, where he speaks of the futility of the romantic solution to the human dilemma. Not the futility of romance, but the futility of using romantic love as a solution to the ultimate dilemma of the human person. It leads into further darkness. It's an instance, perhaps, of what Whitehead might have called misplaced concreteness. Misplacing the source. The more that goes on between two human beings, the worse the bind develops between them. All right. After the break, I'll talk about the movement of that vector. Would anyone want to raise a question at the moment with regard to what we said in the first hour? Tom?
What were those chapters you just mentioned?
Chapter 7 and especially Chapter 8 in The Denial of Death.
Right.
Yes.
You're saying this love has to be unconditional for its human. The person themselves has to perceive it as an unconditional love before they...
Affectively, at least, yes. You have to have the trust of...
Well, how do you get
this person's really not asking
anything. The same problem, not because they're incapable of trust. Well, they're incapable of perceiving that anything could be happening.
Yeah, it has to be a love that breaks through that blindness, that breaks through that incapacity. And if the person is really victimized by mistrust, it may take a long, long time and a lot of pain before it's really clear. This guy is asking nothing of me whatsoever. He's giving me a gift of life. It may take a long time before that dawns on the person. But still, you see, still it's coming from without, and it's breaking into the inability from without. You're right, you're getting at something here. Love deals with dimensions of ourselves that nothing else can deal with. When love comes to meet us, it meets dimensions of ourselves that nothing else can deal with. And it may take a long time before that love is able to dissolve the mistrust that a person might have. And a lot of pain on the part of the one who loves, whether it be human or whatever. A lot of rejection and experience before the message gets through. I'm okay. I am accepted, unconditionally accepted. Yes?
I guess, at least for myself anyway, I have to identify in terms of naming the source of love outside of ourselves. I guess that's where I have trouble with that. I must identify. At least I identify that.
Oh yeah,
I put a name on it.
Yeah. Oh yes. Yes. Oh, yeah.
It becomes amorphous then, if it's not.
Okay, it is. I'm talking about, you know, the love that can sustain a healing from the effects of sin is the love of God. And only God.
Sounds like Augustine. Mm-hmm. My heart is risen from what my heart is risen.
Or Paul says, what will deliver me from this body of death? And then goes into Romans 8. Nothing will separate me from the love of God. Okay, let's pray for a few moments.